Hello, McLean Johnson here. Welcome to a special edition of the Sunday Jam podcast. This show I'm proudly featuring an interview with Bernie Worrell. And Bernie is a musical legend. He started playing piano at the age of 3. And ever since then, he's just been a major force in music. And he plays many different styles. Everything from classical to funk to rock. And he is probably best known for being the musical director for Parliament Funkadelic. And he wrote many other classic songs, including Flashlight. And he's also known for being a member of the Talking Heads. And he's also worked with everyone from Keith Richards to Warren Haynes to everybody in between. And his latest project is Social Librium. You can check them out on MySpace, myspace.com/sociallibrium. And you can also check out Bernie's website, bernieworrell.com. And if you like the show, and you want to hear past episodes, or to download podcasts from the show, please go to sundayjam.podomatic.com.
You remember your first musical memory?
My first concert was at 4 years old. I remember that. I played 40 classical pieces in Asbury Park, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I was born in Long Branch, mm-hmm. down in Jersey Shore. Yeah, I remember that.
Were your parents musical?
My mother was. My mother sang in the choir at church, and she sang at different private functions, and she could have accompany herself on the piano just enough to for her to learn songs, and then other people would accompany her until I started doing it.
Who were some of your biggest influences growing up? Did you mostly start off listening to classical, or?
I wouldn't necessarily listen to it. I played it, but I wouldn't put on classical records. It was just, I could sight read. I had the gift of sight reading also, so I just played what the teacher put in front of me, and I wouldn't listen to classical records until I got to college, the New England Conservatory of Music in Boston, and then, you know, there was full curriculum, and there was the college choir, the New England Conservatory chorus, and we also did concerts with the Boston Symphony and the Boston Pops. But as a child, I would sneak and listen to R&B stations on the radio. And I was influenced by Ray Charles. I had tuned into the Ed Sullivan Show one night, and that's where I first saw the Beatles. Mm-hmm. And I loved them immediately because they mixed musics. That's kind of like what I do now. Or what I have been doing.
You really don't confine yourself to one style of music.
No, that's too constricting and no freedom. I like people, I like different types of musics. I don't like to put any one thing on a pedestal. That's what turned me off from being a classical pianist, because back in the day, it reigned supreme, which is not the case.
What do you feel is the biggest misconception about your sound and your style?
The only thing I can say is I'm labeled as a funk keyboardist, mm-hmm. funk musician. I play more than funk. But that's, I guess, understandable coming from P-Funk and in the Hall of Fame for funk. So people are going to pigeonhole you, except for those that are aware, and like you're doing now, I play more than funk.
Your new project is Social Librium, and how'd that come together? How'd that get started?
Well, I always wanted to, Blackbird McKnight, who's a guitarist, musical director, and lead guitarist for P-Funk, we played together before, but always wanted to do something with each other outside of P-Funk. And I know Melvin Gibbs on bass, J.T. Lewis on drums. I've known them for years. And the original configuration of Social Librium, we were playing in Austria, and JT and Melbourne were at the show because they were appearing there the next night, and they loved it. And at the time, we knew that T.M. Stevens, who was on bass, and Cindy Blackman on drums, we knew that our schedules would be conflicting shortly.
Mm-hmm.
And JT and Melbourne expressed the desire to, if we ever needed them, that they would love to play. And so that's how that happened. And I think Melbourne and Blackbird had played together at some point years prior to this.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just a natural happening. And everybody plays
mm-hmm.
more than one type of music, one type of genre. So that fit in right with what I was hoping would, you know, could happen.
How does your songwriting process work? Does that vary from band to band?
Yes, it varies. It depends on the situation. Some people we just jam with the tape rolling mm-hmm. and piece it together or arrange it there on the spot. Sometimes there's a chart. And then sometimes there's a combination of both, depending on your overdub procedure. Basically, you just get the basic tracks and then overdub.
When you were working with P-Funk,
that was 50 different ways, because there's so many people. We had different combinations, so it's whatever it was. I mean, sometimes it's just me and the drummer, or me and guitar and drums. Other times we'd have maybe five people. It depended. That was a zoo. George and I would have to. We'd do different combinations because, you know, there's different people, different players of different styles.
Mm-hmm.
It so depended on what we were going for. We'd call in different combinations.
Did that really help to broaden P-Funk sound?
Yes, because it wasn't all the same thing. You had a variety. You'd never get bored. People didn't get bored.
When did you first meet George Clinton?
Oh, I must have been maybe 15, 16, maybe later than that. I used to climb out of my bedroom window to sneak down to the barbershop to get my hair processed.
Because
mm-hmm. I was brought up really strict, and my mother wouldn't allow me to hang out with those hoodlums, as she mm-hmm. called them. Not just George and him, but anybody in the neighborhood. I was always, you know, practicing playing the piano. And I guess George heard that there was this kid in town who had something special, and I had heard about this doo-wop group, but I had never met them until I went down to the barbershop. And then one day when he could afford me, he called. That was years later. I was on the road with the musical director for Maxine Brown, a famous R&B vocalist. I was in Bermuda, and George had contacted Judy. And she had a meeting with him and said the meeting went well and George was ready. He had moved everyone to Detroit
mm-hmm.
at that time. And she asked me what I wanted to do. I said, well, I guess we'll try it. And I moved to Detroit, and the rest is history.
Do you remember the first song you wrote with P-Funk?
I think I Got a Thing. It's on the first Funkadelic album. All the stuff on the first Funkadelic album.
What was the first synthesizer you used?
I would have to say the Mini Moog or the Arp, and the Arp Pro Soloist.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to play a keyboard called an RMI, which was it wasn't a synthesizer, but it was a combination of a keyboard, a piano, organ, and harpsichord settings. And I used to use different combinations with that, with some outboard gear pedals.
Mm-hmm.
And people used to think it was a synthesizer, the way I played it. Deal with sound and use different pedals and combinations, make weird noises.
How do you feel that your sound has evolved over the years?
Well, I go to a session, I just listen to the track, you want me to overdub on, and I find the sound on whatever synthesizer, if I don't have my own, like the clarinet or Hammond, whatever's there, I listen to the track, and then I feel around and listen for the sound of what hits me, and then I hit it. So I may play the same thing four different times, but it'll always be different because of the nature of how I play. Because I could play the same song on four different instruments, but it'll be different. I played once a song on a Hammond organ, played the same song on a clarinet, it'll be different. It'll be the same song. Play the same song on an acoustic baby grand, it'll be different, but the same song.
Because you're able to just get different tones out of different instruments, right?
Different tones, and then play the same chord structure, but it'll be voiced differently, or, you know, as far as the root, the third, and the fifth, or the seventh, or phrased different rhythmically. I'm evolving all the time.
Do you remember your first gig with D-Funk?
It's at the 20 Grand nightclub in Detroit. That used to be home base for a lot of the groups, a lot of the Motown groups also. It was the 20 Grand. Stevie Wonder came, all the Motown people came. I think our following started to grow even more after I joined.
When you're playing live with different groups, or Social Librium, or with the Woo Warriors,
or with Talking Heads, Keith Richards, or with Jack Bruce.
Yeah, really.
Or Buckethead.
Right, or Bucket, yes, right. Or Claypool.
Or with Phil Lazaro, Method of Defiance. Or
right.
Anybody.
Do you create a set list in advance, or does it just vary from group to group?
So I do a lot of guest appearances, so it's whoever I'm playing with, they'll make the set list up, or we all sit down together and make a set list up, or the artist who I'm playing with will make the set list up, and I'll just add to it. And they usually want some P-Funk song. We do it together. Sometimes it's right in the dressing room after sound check.
Yeah. When you were playing with P-Funk, did you make set lists?
Well, especially, you know, the big stage shows, that was already planned, so you had the same set list because you had to, when the mothership was going to come down and everything was set. So you didn't have to make a set list. You know, everything was set.
Within your own groups, do you use a set list?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I say, oh, no, let's not do this one. We might call out something, or somebody will call out something. Or the audience. The audience gets into it. We want to hear this. Uh-huh. You know, so you have to divert. Because they'll keep hollering and keep pushing. You know, sometimes the group had never played it before. And I'll play a little bit of it. And cut it off and say, well, hope that suffice. You know the one that you called out.
When you were working with the Talking Heads, did you approach working with them differently?
Actually, when they first called me in and invited me to hear their stuff, because I didn't know who Talking Heads was, but they knew who I was, and of course they knew about P-Funk. They were fans of P-Funk. So when I first went into the studio with them, it was like an easy transition because they kind of work the same way P-Funk, you know, get the studio, jam some stuff, or have a basic change, and then everybody would just play and work out the parts. So it was kind of like almost the same.
Did the songs evolve like out of jams?
Well, I would say for the most part, yes. And then David would do the lyrics later.
What advice would you give to up-and-coming musicians?
Learn the business, if possible. I know it's when you're younger, you don't really pay attention to it, and that's where you get beat. Not that it's any fault of the artist, but it's a whole another thing, and it takes up a lot of time. And when you're young, you're not thinking. You're thinking about it, but it's not your priority. But try to learn as much of the business as much as possible, so as to protect yourself from all the crap out there, and also. Hands-on instrument. You know, machines are good, but learn your craft. Hands-on is best teacher. Of course, practice. get out and meet other people, jam. That's a lot of knowledge you gain that way, learning different fields and how to play different types of music also, so you don't get stuck in one thing.
What do you feel has been some of the hardest aspects of your career?
Trying to get my money back that I'm owed. Nothing else is hard. It's a gift to me. Everything's easy. Memory now, and I have to have more charts when I'm playing with different people because I can't remember. They're jib notes. I'm older now, and that's the only thing that a little deterrent. People can order Social Libyan CD. It's called For You, For Us, For All on iTunes, mm-hmm. or their favorite digital outlet, but and it can be pre-ordered on Amazon.com. And there's also another project, Bernie and Blackbird and Lotsa Electrons. That's Lotsa Electrons. Bernie and Blackbird and Lotsa Electrons.
How does that project sound differ from Social Librium?
Tell the people, you people buy it and tell us. It's pre-formed and it's been formed. There's structured things and it's just some really nice playing and nice grooves, maybe a little freer in structure. I have a solo CD called Free Agent and a Christmas CD called Christmas Woo.
You just never stop, do you? You just keep going, huh?
Well, you know, you got to try to take advantage of the downloading, and things have changed, as you know, nowadays, man.
You've worked with so many different artists from so many different genres. Are there any artists you haven't worked with that you would like to?
Yeah, the ones I want to work with are past. Jimi Hendrix, Bob Marley, mm-hmm. favorite Covered Mule, Derek mm-hmm. Trucks, Papa Marley. I like you too.
Really been taken in by the jam band scene in recent years. Have you had a favorite recent concert you've played?
I just did the Bear Creek Festival in Florida, mm-hmm. sided with Papa Marley, Fred Wesley from Horny Horns, and
nice.
James Brown, Galactic, Dumpster Funk, Ivan Neville, one of my proteges, do a lot with Leo Nocentelli and the Meters, and George Porter from the Meters.
Nice. How do you feel that funk is evolving? You're talking about playing with Dumpster Funk and Galactic.
I think Dumpster Funk is taking it further, because I haven't heard anything else that I really like. Well, I don't listen to this radio that's out here. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I listen to PBS stations or college stations because mm-hmm. I'm not too into the music that's what they call music. That's I don't listen to it. And I don't have... I like satellite radio, but Delta Funk is kicking.
It's true.
That's the evolution I like to see. And I feel that's happening, and I feel that they can take it even further.
What do you like about their sound?
It's heavy. Bass-oriented. It's heavy. It's funky, man. You know, it's got the New Orleans flavor mixed with mm-hmm. P-Funk. You know, they came up on P-Funk to mix heavy vocals, heavy everything. It's heavy. Rock. It's got rock-oriented. It's a continuation.
It does seem like so much music today is lacking that sort of denseness that P-Funk had, or like the Talking Heads had.
Yeah, I think. Dumpster Funk has that denseness and is even a little more heavier because I mean, sometimes they have two bass players playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a bottom man. Mm-hmm. Not a kick drum and heavy bass.
Whenever you're playing funk, you always strive to keep that bass going.
I'm basically a rhythmic player. I'm a drummer actually, but I play keyboards. I play rhythmically.
Mm-hmm.
I mix it. And so I do rhythm with chord structure and melody. And so I'm always cueing to the drummer. That's my thing. Because I hear everything. Everything is in my monitors at the same time because I play with everything. Then I mix myself in mm-hmm. with everybody else accordingly.
You just lock in for that syncopation?
Yeah, for the groove. First of all, the groove's got to be there. And then I can get them free. I syncopate, play the same line or go off the line or the rhythmic part. Just play. Make the part fit the groove and come up with a signature riff color. I color with chord structure.
When you're writing songs, do you create the riff first? Like when you're working on Flashlight, like how'd your process work?
Well, there's a drum track and a guitar track. That's all it was. So I just started with the bass. I just down, 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 mm-hmm. down. That came into my head. That was it. I usually first take that, because the first thing off the top of your head is usually the one. I'm known for getting rocked on the first take. And for those that don't know, I just tell the engineer, rotate, I listen to the track and then hit it.
Is a lot of your stuff captured live like that?
Yeah.
Seems like there's a lack of that spontaneity in music today. Not a lot of stuff is cut live anymore.
Right, and that's part that's missing. Is everything's too contrived. It's prison.
That was Bernie Worrell, and I'm McLean Johnson. This has been a special edition of the Sunday Jam Podcast. If you like what you're hearing and you want to subscribe to the podcast or to hear past interviews and past episodes, please check out SundayJam.podomatic.com.